I'm here with Guy Lloyd, right at the start of, I call it week zero of the Fringe, because everyone's gearing up. Guy, when you walk out the door each morning, are you a full version of Guy Lloyd, or is this still a bit of you that kind of has labelled yourself as something like a celebrity?
I'd never label myself as a celebrity, but there has been a part of me that's believed it when other people have called me that. I think I mainly walk out of the house just thinking I'm going to miss the bus again and leg it down the road. That's generally my exit from my house. But yeah, we're sort of like not far away now, aren't we? A few days away, and I've sort of seen the venues popping up and the posters popping up, and it's a mixture of excitement and nerves because it's only a week away now from my first one-man show.
So, and that one-man show is really about Guy Lloyd, and I've seen a preview of it, and apart from it being genuinely very funny, there is a sort of a tinge of, which maybe all good comedy's got, a bit of sadness in there too, isn't there? This is a real human story here.
Yeah, you know, it's autobiographical, so I can ham up the comedy side of it, which hopefully I do, but it's a true story, and it's a happy story with, I guess, a sad ending. About a dream job, you know, about a job that I really wanted, worked really hard to get, lucky enough to be in it for 13 years, and then inevitably it came to an end, and the sort of the whole adjustment around that. So yeah, it's, you know, it's all about love and loss ultimately.
And ultimately, if there was a $1 million offer to go and work for one of those snarling beasties that gobbled up local radio, would you be in there like a shot?
God, yeah. Do you know what? I don't know, really. I mean, one thing I've found since I've left Juice, or since the job came to an end, is that actually it was like any other job where I had to get up and really think about what I was going to do on the show, do the show. And, you know, I was on that hamster wheel of work, Monday to Friday, 13 years. And it wasn't until I jumped off the hamster wheel that I thought, actually, perhaps I don't want to just jump back straight into radio and do that every day. I'd like to do other things. And that's what's been really good about this whole ending, is the sort of sheer, I guess, nothingness of like, well, I could do anything now. You know, I'm lucky enough to have a bit of a profile in the city and lots of good contacts that have been really helpful. But creatively, I'm sort of quite open-minded. I'm at that stage at the moment.
And in this noisy city that we are in, as you can hear in the background as well, though, you actually could have taken your noise creatively into, some people have told their story in a film, documentary, mockumentary, some have written a book. You've chosen to get up live in front of people. What was behind that creative decision?
It was probably the most scary, I think, and it felt like I had to, it was a very personal show. And I wanted a reaction, I guess. I wanted an instant reaction from people with the highs and lows of a job in quote-unquote show business. So as much as I like those other mediums of art, and I have done, there are elements of the show that I filmed and that I did in my previous video series, I think I wanted that instant reaction from the audience around, yeah, the joy and also the sort of sadness and tragedy of it all, really, because I think it's that instantaneous thing. And just to, yeah, I could say just to really challenge myself into doing something I've never done before. I've done Fringe shows before as a collective, back with the May Days, and also with in a duo. So it was about doing something myself as well. And I'm working with a director and a co-writer, Kevin Quatermass, who's been fantastic. He's really helped me and guided me. But, yeah, essentially, I just wanted to bare my soul and vulnerability, I think, in front of a live audience, many of which were listening to the show for many years.
So, in a way, a bit like an actor, a bit like a theatre piece, this goes into a rehearsal room and people tell you what to do. But when I saw it, that was clearly there. This is not a made-up, on-the-spot piece of theatre, but you've allowed yourself space to improvise a bit too, haven't you?
Yeah, improvisation is my thing, you know, as I mentioned the May Days. I mean, I was in the May Days, who are still going strong as a comedy improv group, both nationally and internationally.
And in this Fringe as well.
And in the Fringe. And, you know, that was my first love, really. And whenever I got lines to learn, whether it was at school or later on in life, I was terrified because a terrible memory and remembering lines. And I much prefer the magic of improvisation. So, yeah, this particular show was a structure of, well, I know what happened in my life, because it's my life. But we wanted to split it up in sections where some of it was quite heartfelt and emotional and some of it's just plain silly, like we did on the radio. You know, there's a quiz, for instance. We've got a celebrity guest. But yeah, my strength, I think, is my improvisation. So there's a lot of sections that we're going to be reliant on the audience. And I enjoy that element of it.
And in terms of art meeting reality, do you think that Alan Partridge ever became you?
Did Alan Partridge ever become me?
Well, I mean, actually, and the other way around. Do you look at aspects of you that you were glad to leave behind? Because, you know, you became a bit of a version of yourself that you're relieved not to be.
Yeah, there's certainly a point, I think, probably after my appearance in Britain's Got Talent, where it got a bit more than local celebrity. And it was always local celebrity, quote unquote, from the Argus. But when you're on a show like that in front of 9 million people, and then people put, you know, my alter ego, they marry the two and think, oh, that's the guy off the radio that we listened to. You know, and that was the point where it probably got to my head a little bit, and my ego was sort of shot up out of proportion. And I've been there before and I recognised the signs, but I did get a bit lost in it, I think. And I certainly strutted around town like, you know, I'm Guy Lloyd from the radio, rather than just I'm Guy Lloyd who used to work in a chicken farm. Do you know what I mean?
But what's clever about the show, and I said it's funny, and, you know, people know me for being very honest, is part of the funniness, I think, and I'll bounce this off you, is that you're not really laughing at yourself, are you? I mean, it's not just, the joke's not on you in this show, even though sad things happen. So you are kind of making comedy about yourself, and we do laugh at that person on the screen, but in a way it's a different person to who I'm interviewing now at one level. It's the performer, it's the artiste. But also it's a real vulnerable human being, and there's comedy in that too, isn't there? It's the place where laughter and tears are quite close together.
Yeah, you know, and it's very hard to find that distinction, you know. Particularly when you're doing a job for so long, you know, because a typical day at Juice would be waking up in the morning and thinking, well, what am I going to do on the show? And spending 2 or 3 hours thinking about it, then doing the show. And so you're sort of switched on as Guy Lloyd on the radio for most of the day. And then, of course, in the evenings, if I wasn't going home to the family, I was out doing, you know, parties, media type of stuff. And so you're permanently switched on. And, of course, if you do that, you, for a certain amount of time, you become that, like you say, that persona, that caricature. And what's been really nice about this show and since I've left Juice is that ego has been stripped down a bit to sort of, and I wanted to sort of really bare my soul, and I'm still on a bit of a journey of finding out who I really am, to be honest. So I hope this show is part of that process.
Now, in that rehearsal room, that devising room, that writing room with directors, how did you decide what's funny?
I always have a gut instinct. I feel quite lucky. I mean, obviously, it's a subjective thing, comedy, but in terms of what makes me laugh, you know, I have a gut instinct. I mean, I've got my director sat opposite me, and he's brutally honest, and that really helps as well. But if I'm passionate about a particular piece and I think it's funny, I'm quite stubborn about that stuff and I'll hold on to it. But of course, it's not until you get in front of an audience, as you know, because you were at the preview, then you actually realise that ultimately it's the audience that decides what's funny. And that was what was so good about the preview, because a big chunk of the show, which we thought was fantastic in rehearsals, actually didn't work that well in front of an audience. And that was really good. And so you kind of go away with your tail slightly between your legs, but actually think, well, you know, I'm doing this for an audience. I want to entertain the audience, and ultimately they decide. So that was a really good indication of what I needed to change for the show.
In the last few years, there's been a statistically proven rise in podcasts particularly. But, you know, people going back to radio, enjoying radio. The great thing about apps on phones is they can play, you know, radio stations from around the world that you'd never have been able to get access to easily. We're going off video. We're going off watching. So is there an opportunity here for you?
In terms of podcasts?
Yeah, and just the future of radio. I mean, do you feel good about it? Is in the end this kind of reaction against large corporations gobbling up small ones, the anti-capitalist movement that's around, could we see local radio come back even bigger?
I think so. I really do, because, you know, people are just getting fed up with it. I mean, I think you get to a point where how much beige can you take? There becomes a tipping point. I mean, I saw on social media yesterday that Amanda Holden has been confirmed to co-present the Heart Breakfast Show with Jamie Thingston. It's just like, oh, so that's that, you know, that woman off Britain's Got Talent who's done no radio at all. She's just sort of plonked onto a big show because she's a quote unquote celebrity, not actually sure what Amanda Holden's talent is. Lovely girl, I'm sure, but she voted me off, by the way. But I think people are thinking, well, you know, you can drive around the country and tune in your radio station to the local radio station, and it pretty much commercially pretty much sounds all the same. So I think people, you know, we're a creative bunch in this country. We like new things. We've been at the forefront of a lot of art, and I think there will come a point, podcast is a great example, where we'll get fed up with it, and I hope we go back to like local and community, because that's what people really like. They connect to it, you know, and you can't connect to Amanda Holden in London when you're sat in, you know, in the Pavilion Gardens in Brighton. That's my personal view.
Do you think if you'd never been a broadcaster on the radio, that Guy Lloyd would have liked listening to Guy Lloyd?
Oh, I would have worshipped him. I don't know. It probably would have annoyed me, actually.
Let's just deconstruct that, though. You know, what would have annoyed you about you, and what would you have liked about you?
I think what would have annoyed me is the fact that he laughs at his own jokes. I'm talking about him in the third person now, Paul. This is what you got me to do. What I liked about him, I think, it was his very relaxed on-air demeanour. And my boss once said to me, the owner at Juice, Daniel Nathan, he says, what I love about you guys is that you don't sound like a radio presenter. And I took that as a real compliment, because I knew what he meant. He said, you know, I sound like just someone you could have a chat with in a garden cafe, Paul, in the sunshine, rather than like, hey, you're listening to, you know. And I was a bit like that in the beginning, hospital radio and stuff. But when I got really comfortable with it, and when I realised that people were connecting with it and enjoying it, then it was the easiest thing in the world to do, is just put up that microphone, put up that fader, and just be me. You know, a slightly hammed up version of me, but essentially me. And also, you know, let's not forget, I wasn't doing a show in Doncaster. You know, when you're doing a show in Brighton, it's my favourite place in the world. And I've lived in Sydney and Australia, and I've been around a bit. It's still my favourite city, so I'm so passionate about everything that goes on in this city. And so it was an absolute pleasure to be on a local radio station talking about local things, you know. I mean, how good is that?
Final question. What would be... we could snatch defeat from the jewels of victory here. So trying to avoid too much PR, which we can find in all the brochures, what would be your genuine invite to people to come and see your show?
My genuine...
invitation. So I'm saying don't fake it, mate.
I think... I mean, fans of the show would really like it. And I think fans of, can I say, me, would really like it. Because they'll probably see another side of me that they haven't seen before.
And I'm not a fan of you, and I actually really like it. Just so we get that.
Thanks, Paul. Oh, you say the sweetest things. I get it, though. But also, I think we all have dreams. Some of us decide to go for it, and some of us get delayed for whatever reason, or life circumstances change. So ultimately, I hope it inspires people, really, because for me it's just a chapter. I've realised a dream, you know. When I was 30, I wanted to be on the radio. I got on the radio. I now feel like I've ticked that box, and I'm now thinking about other dreams. So I hope it inspires people to sort of like really chase their dreams ultimately, but also know when they get it, it's not going to last forever, and you're probably going to have to pick yourself back up again when it's not so, you know, when the sun isn't shining kind
but
of thing.
But also, I mean, there's a follow-up question I wasn't planning on, but that suggests, you know, that you have to be thrown out. Otherwise, you'll just continue chasing the same dream and then you don't get to chase the other ones.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a weird day when I found out Juice was being sold. And ultimately, when I found out we were being sold, I thought, well, my number's up here, because going to Capital, I mean, the presenters on there are half my age. And within 24 hours of finding that information out, my wife also lost her job the next day. And she'd been in her job for 15 years. So we're both like coasting along, sailing along. And then suddenly within 24 hours, we're both facing unemployment. And of course, it's a difficult one, but it also forces you to make decisions and go in a different direction. And I knew that Juice was going to come to an end, but I probably got too comfortable and sailed along with it, because it was a good gig, and gigs like that don't come along very often. So yeah, it's forced me into having to do other things, including mostly this show at the moment. So for that, I'm grateful.
I think I'll get the last word on this, because I've seen a lot of comedy where comedians have tried to mix improv, stand-up, storytelling, film, a bit of multimedia, a bit of clown, a bit of music. And if it were a pizza, it's got all the wrong stuff on that doesn't quite work. But having seen your preview, this all seems to come together really well, and I'm really happy to recommend it. And it's been a delight to talk to somebody that I'm still not a fan in the negative way, but I really was a fan after seeing your show. So thanks very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.